re-energize for this workshop on the agile approach in learning design. I am Claudia Musikan from Berlin. I'm the owner of a small e-learning consultancy and content development company basically down the road from this conference venue. So if you need some advice on what's around here, I'd be glad to share that with you. Today we're going to look at the challenges and opportunities of marrying agile, flexible design with the more rigid, formal education system. And I'm very proud to be presenting to you the three speakers, which are in the order of seating, Jasmina Nikolic, Denise Gaspar-Richard, and Stephen Downs on the very end. I will introduce each speaker to you once we get a little deeper into the topic of agile design. And we are talking about agile design as talking about a lot about the old days and new days. We are talking about the old days of software development and the old days of learning design, and we're talking about the new days in which everything is done differently. And I don't know how many of you are software developers or programmers. Raise your hand, software developers. So I see you. Thank you. to introduce Jasmina Nikolic. Jasmina Nikolic is the Vice President of Higher Education Reform Expert Teams at the University, at the Ministry of Education, Science and Technology in Belgrade, Serbia. She is an agile organization development consultant and a certified Scrum Master and some other certificates in that direction. She holds a master's in oral traditions and memory from the University of Belgrade and has done Spanish studies at the University of Madrid. So, welcome with me, Jasmina Nikolic, who will introduce us to the Agile Education Network.
We stare when objects behave in an unexpected way. we just stare at it. And that's what we do today. In education, not anymore so much in software, but in education, I'm there to say that we may easily stare at students, at study programs, at learning outcomes, and how we connect with the enterprises and the labor market. And now I'm going to tell the story, and it will be the end of this framework. So I think it's my personal opinion, and for the implementation of Agile across the industries, it's all about automation. And what happened in the development of civilization is that we had two different paradigm shifts where we just stared. First one was when we passed from orality into literacy. So we stopped producing super high value information orally, writing it, transferring it to some other information method. And we stopped seeing the world as a global thing because we couldn't actually analyze the information, write it down, go back to it and find it there. It was oral. Memory doesn't work like that. Memory is fixed. What can be fixed? And it's obvious. Then, when we switched between orality and literacy, we went into something that today doesn't work, but it worked for a couple of centuries, which is we were able to go find a phenomenon, analyze the phenomena into the most the deepest depths, go back to surface, write down, go back again to surface, and find information there. So the information was fixed. And it was much easier for us to get isolated, to go into disciplines, into highly specialized sectors, silos. And we have it in businesses, and we have it in science, and we have it in education. We have very siloed departments. We have very siloed disciplinary science. We have very siloed sales, marketing, development. So it does resemble workflow, like sequential, one by one. And what happens at the gaps? Information here was as well very valuable, but not so valuable as the first place. People could print it, it could be distributed quickly, quicker, and much more people have access to it. And what happens now is that the second very huge paradigm shift is that information got cheap. It's just cheap, it's a huge paradigm shift. It's everywhere, we can't get rid of it actually. I don't know how you feel about getting information from all sorts of networks and applications. I don't know, okay. I imagine it doesn't feel like something valuable. And schools don't look at it like progressive schools. They are not with extra teaching and people just listening because information gets transferred. There's no one that knows everything. There's no one person that knows everything about one subject. So new shapes of schooling are like this. This is Finland. And while the world was super isolated, like totally split into smaller parts during the literacy phase, now we go back to global. We can go back to surface and try to understand what happens in the global level. The only problem we have is we don't know how to communicate the knowledge we have. So we need to learn how to integrate the knowledge and how to learn bits and parts from other disciplines in cross-functional settings. We can't have a problem. We have to work with other people because knowledge is so complex and information is everywhere. And we have to be able to learn how what I know fits into what you know. And it's very hard. So basically, you're balancing between old paradigm and new paradigm, and sometimes it just confuses us. The time for this paradigm shift to happen fully is really long. It won't happen fully in our lives. But we can see some benefits of the old paradigm and benefits of the new paradigm. So that's why it's so confusing. Sometimes you think, okay, why am I doing this new stuff if yoga works well? Then you start the old one and you say, no, it doesn't work anymore. We have to go to the new one. I won't go to this. You will have fun. There is a lot of paradigm pairs that you can establish. But one of them is very important, and it's the hierarchy thing, like command and control consciousness. Whereas on the other side, you have this tech and that. What does it mean to be agile then? First of all, it means culture. It means new paradigm. When you say new paradigm, you say new value system, new way of looking at the world, and new way of dealing with this domain. And the software industry did it very well, because they developed a thing called Agile Manifesto at the beginning of the development of Agile movement. And I want to go with you through these values. And if you don't remember anything else from this session, please do remember this. The first value is we value more individuals and interactions over processes and tools. So it's always better to have a good conversation on something than the process to follow and the tools to use. Which is a bit awkward, because what I'm wanting to talk about today is how you use a tool, which is a Kanban tool. But I will skip that. We can go through that afterwards in the discussion. The second one is we value more working software over comprehensive recommendation. Meaning, I want to use my time to make something valuable as quickly as I can, because I need feedback on that. I need to know if I'm making something valuable, because otherwise, maybe I'm not. The third one, customer collaboration over contract negotiation. This one sounds awkward even for the businesses, because normally when you sign contract, it's the culture of not precisely trusting the other one. And collaboration is based on trust. So totally different mindset. And it works, I can tell you, it does work, not always. Responding to change or following a plan, I think this one is evolutionary and easy understandable. But somehow we find it very difficult when we have to change because we're scared. If we don't know what we change into, then we get scared. This is based on 12 principles that I won't go into those. But I won't go into that. The first one is very important. The first one says, whatever you do to delight your client, whoever your client is. Whatever you do, whatever your product is, you do it because you want someone to be delighted. This is one example of agile manifesto education. I will choose one. One made by me for a project I coordinated, and the other one is Bella Kobe, presented to Agile India. And I need to go to this thing. This. And I will add this one. What happened once when I looked for a company in the industry that I wanted to define agile principles for them, and I looked for experiences there, and I found a guy, a programmer from Google, software developer, saying that the agile implementation was all complete nonsense. And there's an answer of a guy who invented one of the main structures in agile, Jeff Sabourin, the structure called Scrum, and he says something amazing to me because he strongly believes that's a skill we need to develop nowadays in education and everywhere else. The master. He said that what I understood, as Google, as long as they have one code branch for 15,000 developers and deploy multiple times a day for multiple products, they are agile as far as I am concerned, no matter what they are doing. As long as they have working software every day and don't tolerate developers who can't deliver it, I think that's awesome. So integration skills for the guest. That's the main thing.
Eric Bogos, I'm from from the Denison Foundation in the Netherlands. You just really short mentioned Agile in education. Could you elaborate a bit more on that? Mm-hmm.
Of course. So if you look at
If you look at the Agile is what is the main setting? You have a product, you have people making it, and then you have sort of processes product. So you look for what the product is in education. At least that's my concept. So I would go to my classroom and I actually change the story. I have probably now 70 trained Scrum teams with 6 Scrum process owners. And me acting as a product owner with clients. So I have clients from outside the academy. Normally NGOs, normally non-profit or social enterprises, because you can't really put enterprises into a state university. But you develop a product backlog together with clients, such as, for example, Wikipedia, because we had an excellent project in Wikipedia where we developed a product backlog for our students on how to write a Wikipedia article. And the result was amazing because they got the product and the requirements, and one extremely important thing that complicates the whole implementation afterwards, which is acceptance criteria. Because you say, this is good enough, if, and then you explain. That makes grading totally different. Because you have a definition of good enough. And it works. And what you don't have in businesses and you have in education is that you can make the same product on a low cost with several teams. So I have right now 10 teams making the same article in Wikipedia. And when you compare the velocity of the teams, initially they will be, you know, slower and quicker. So you can't trade on that. But at the end, they will match. That is complicated, the product itself.
Okay, another question? There's another one in the front row next to the...
I'm Morena from the Netherlands, University of Amsterdam. I saw in your presentation the reductionism, and was claiming reduced complex phenomena to the interactions of their parts. Specifically, if you relate it to the communicating to what we know, complex phenomena and interaction of parts, there's a gap. Can you go into this a little bit deeper?
I will give you a real life example, and I found the example in an excellent book. I have a long now for the business lesson, and this is me. That's how it goes. And the book starts with the example of a person that got scared one morning because she finds something on the body, like a cancer drug. And then the process of diagnosis takes too long because you have, you know, you go to the doctor, you step in, then you go out, then you go to another specialist. They go to another specialist. And specialists themselves, they don't communicate among themselves. You are the container of the information, which is wrong because you're not an expert. So the right way would be that you step in the hospital, the experts around you, and they communicate what they know from their fields, like real experts. They communicate around you in order to understand quickly, because that's the value. They add time to you, not you to them. What's wrong with you? Unfortunately, we have that in our systems, I mentioned in every country, but unfortunately, it's when it's too late. You know, when you are all dying or at the end of a terminal process, then they surround you. And you call it the surgery, it's quantity. I don't know how you call it in your countries. But that's when you get all the oncologists and specialists and radiologists and stuff surround to decide what's your future when you don't actually have a future. So it should be done early in the process, that the communication.
Okay, one last question, or otherwise there will be more time after the third presentation. So thanks again, Yasmin, for sharing your framework with us on agile development. And now I would like to introduce you to Dr. Denise Gaspar Richards. Dr. Gaspar Richards is head of the course development department in the academic programming and delivery divisions at the University of the West Indies, the open campus in Trinidad and Tobago. So let's travel a long, long way from a very
This is not like the ideal model or anything that we use for instructional design. This is really a model that allows us to design course materials wrapped around open education resources. So it reduces the need for students to purchase textbooks and also reduces their cost. Because in Caribbean, which I have this book, so you'll see a map, it's easier for me to look down than to look up. You'll see a map here of the Caribbean, and you'll notice that I have tried to identify where we are located. There is a little block on the map to the right that shows you where we are in relation to the rest of the world. So North America will be up to the left, and Europe will be over to the right. Okay, so these are the islands where we have the orange lines, those are the islands that comprise the open campus, just to tell you that. So you'll see that it's very small, it's scattered, our economies are fledgling economies, we've got developing countries, developing islands. So cost is a very important element for us when we're looking at students and getting them into our campus. Our campus also is not funded by governments because, of course, they are also dealing with charges. So we very much depend on student fee income. We can't charge a very high fee to come into our courses, so we have to keep costs down. So hence, open educational resources and collaborative concept. So, if you can just go to the next slide. I'm not comfortable with using this at all. I'm sorry. Can you help me moving to the slides? Thank you very much. Okay, so the project, wraparound, this is content and support. Content and support is really where we were before 2014. Content and support really looks at us designing course materials, working with course developers who are subject matter experts, so we work with them independently. So an instructional designer, if that person is assigned to work on developing courses and program, take a bachelor's program, that's about 30 courses. And if we're working with 30 subject matter specialists, we try to break it up, look at the courses by levels, so maybe we would even 5 to 10 courses at any one time. They were working individually with these persons, so the benefits of all the training and all the experience was just going one-to-one. Then, of course, we have multimedia designers to be working for that content, and again, that would be one-to-one. So you're not getting the benefit of a team kind of setup. So we realized that there were issues that we needed to look at. One of the things that drove us was the strategy for the academic division. We were no longer able to sustain such a model. We had to produce content very rapidly, and we had to find a way to do this with. So what we did there is we looked at process using a project management process, and we, by chance, we happened upon the Agile Design model. That allowed us now to bring our teams together. So all of our content experts who are working in a particular program, we're working on, let's say, year one courses, they can all be together in an online environment, working collaboratively, so they're sharing data on what each other's doing, so that you find the courses can be sequential, there is no overlapping, because everybody knows what everybody else is doing, and they're following a particular plan. So we recognize that needs to happen, and we started that process of moving and transitioning. Of course, there are implications there for the departmental operations. We are looking at really differently with content persons. We are looking at our instructional designers working differently to support these individuals. And of course, there is an impact on our production teams to produce materials. So we found that it was easier now to design our learning activities around that AR content, because we have everybody working collaboratively together. So it would be a good idea to move persons into that way of thinking. So if I can go to the Agile Design slide, please. Thank you. So Yasmin was just talking about some of the characteristics when we look at Agile Learning, and particularly we recognize there's an opportunity to be collaborative. There was also an opportunity for us to work in an integrated manner. We also recognized that we could be social model. We could be very creative in what we did in terms of helping our subject matter experts to design authentic learning activities. We could be very responsive because if you're working in a project management kind of environment, we can respond very quickly to things that need to change. And of course, we have to be very lean because we are talking about developing a number of courses in a short space of time, and we need to do things in a very clean and critical manner so that we can move ahead very, very quickly. Some of the support strategies that we had to use was, of course, we had to have an emphasis on cross-functionality. We could not just operate one-on-one, so we have to look at bringing all members of the particular team together. We had to have an emphasis on interaction. People had to be able, we had to be very comfortable. So if you, we are in an online environment, as I showed you in the map we started. So your content expert could be in Germany, your content expert could be in Canada, anywhere. And I am in the team, I'm based in Trinidad. Some of my instructional designers are in another island in Jamaica, another island in Barbados. So we all over the place. So we really needed to be able to interact in a way that brought meaning to what we were doing. Also, we want to have usable deliverables. We don't want to just design content and when it goes into the learning environment, it's not meaningful to the students, it's not meaningful to the persons who are leading the courses. We also looked at an emphasis on rapid and decisive response to change initiatives. People are very, you know, change is very difficult for most of us, for all of us. And we had people who were doing in a particular way over a period of many years. And while we are saying, listen, we are in a change environment, this is how we are going to be looking at design and content, and found that the institutions could not step up to the plate. But we were already in that situation, so the head honcho has to pull all the hands and pull people along. It's very, very painful. And the head honcho had to actually do some of the work in the end, so that when the time came for the course to be delivered, there was something that was available to go into our living environment. So we had to keep, you know, a kind of process going that was very, 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 very quick. We depended a lot on templates because there was no other way to get it done. And ensure that we could do it in the time period we needed to, because we looked at a 4-month period for design, development, and review of an entire course. And we're talking about more than 30 courses, and in our first phase of development, we were doing something like 57 courses. So it was a bit crazy if you can think of it like that. So let's look at some views on the literature very quickly with regard to Agile. The key features for our department staff: rapid, responsive, targeted approaches, and lean. So very much a project management approach to what we need to do. And we found that persons are not, they were not really prepared for that change. They wanted to stay in their old environment and do what they were doing because they were comfortable. And now you had somebody looking over their shoulder. One of the other things is that as a head of department, I could not see everything because everybody was doing it in their little corner. I could not actually see what was happening down here. In the online environment, in the collaborative, I am in there and I'm looking at everything and I can comment on everything and I can say, no, this is not good, the way it should be. Look back at this, these learning objectives. How are you going to measure that? You know, that is not go together, you need to relook this. That wasn't happening before because I couldn't see it. So suddenly there you had somebody in their face all the time in the online environment, managing that process and trying to bring it to where we need to be. So this is one of the things that we learned from Maya, that Agile and Lean living with the speed of change, that's in an international journal, that the key finding that Maya saw when they looked at this view from the literature in a management setting is that the majority of employees see their colleagues as a more valuable resource for acquiring new skills or knowledge than their internal learning management systems. And I wanted to be able to apply that to what was happening in our environment. In terms of the learner-centric view, the key features for our learners was that we were developing courses for new style learners, so we had to factor that in. We had to show that our courses had some real-world relevance, that there would be some flexibility, both in terms of the learning styles and the students to be able to use, and in terms of the types of resources that we are able to provide them, and also that they can go look for themselves using kind of guidance and materials. We also had a very nimble in terms of preparing our courses for students, and of course, understanding skills, which was just so critical, and it's something that we had concentrated on before. So this is an opportunity to bring in, you know, go digital, look at the kinds of media communication skills that we wanted to develop in our students, critical thinking skills, innovativeness, all of these things we had to be sure would have been included in the courses that we were designing. So, if we move now to Project Center, am I doing time? Okay? That's great. All right. So, the key elements that we thought that we need to have for successful projects and moving our course development into this flexible and dynamic kind of environment is, of course, that we wanted to be integrated, we wanted to be collaborative, we wanted to be have creative opportunities available. Because if you're talking about project management, you're talking about being very rigid and moving things along in a particular way, but we recognize we can't do differently. So in terms of what is happening in courses, while we had the courses in the development side structured in such a way where they would have to develop a course online, and then they would have to do a course plan, and they would give all of the elements of what we were going to include in the course materials, and then of course they design the course materials using your wraparound concept. We realized that it could not be a linear thing, it could not be just move from one directly to the other. So while we had a course online and they looked at the course plan, and they were looking at the course plan, we realized there were things that they needed to change. Go back, look at your course online, then move on, you continue on with your materials, you do your materials, you realize there are some resources that come back that you really need to include, so you have to keep going back. So that meant that we had to be meeting constantly, so we were working through weekly meetings, trying to figure out what the problems, if there were any, what we needed to change, what we needed to do, and continue on in that type of process. Of course, we're living together in the online environment. Why there is a slide here, I'm not going to go exact. What I want to do is go to the next slide, which really shows you for the student. This is what we, this is right, we're doing what we were doing. We wanted students to be able to move from a point where they can filter information, they can select information, so they can know what they will be practicing when they get into the review. They would have to be able to integrate information because, of course, we want them to be able to use whatever we are providing that material and providing that kind of authentic experience that we want. And, of course, for them to figure out what might use and how would I use this new knowledge and skills that I've developed in a real world environment. There's a lot of authenticity going on here. So next slide, please. How we did it, as I said, we talked through our process that we used prior to 2014, and there were a number of processes that we used prior to 2014. So we consolidated, we re-engineered, we had a number of templates of design, we revised all of our protocols, and of course, we redesigned our collaborative group spaces. So we work right now in a group environment where we have everybody interacting just as students would in if they're using the learning management system. Project management approach, we had targets, we looked at the risk assessment, we had those weekly meetings, we always had a briefing at the end of each stage, and of course we had to have some contingencies in place. And what our outcomes were, human performance, of course, we have the departmental leadership, you know, because it's that the top line looked, what kind of leadership I brought to them, and we interrogated that. How effective the teams in that process, we have interrogated that. Our processes, we have done that, and what kinds of lessons have we learned. We are still finding ourselves in a situation where some of our multimedia requests are not linked to the generated strategies of learning. We need to focus more on quality of learning activities, we recognize that, and we need to have all of this linked to record integration, organization, and elaboration strategies throughout the project. So whatever we do in terms of development, we have to use these kinds of challenges to help our students to learn. Okay? And I think I'll end here. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for introducing us to this really big project on redesigning learning processes at the University of the West Indies. Have we time for two or three questions to Denise? Okay, there's one.
that's how I'm able to say it, you know, we have entirely some of the processes to make these changes, because we had the content developers actually reflected on the process as we went through the process. And we had made these changes because the process I described that ended, that first series ended in July. At that time, I didn't have time to really go back and get information. I now have information because we have assessed our process. We have started another phase, which began in October, and we use the lessons that we learned from reviewing all of that information, the teams, and the portfolio, which is very valuable because persons really, put their heart into what they have to say on the content development side of it, and we'll be able to use that to improve the process to this next one.
There was a question in the
Thank you for an interesting presentation. Curious, what do you think is the biggest challenge for sustainability of this approach?
Wow. It's thinking about the performance side, because it's a startup. I can tell you, because as you guys have reported, everyone is accountable. And there we had courses that had to be ready to go into the start of the academic year at the end of August. And when I looked at their pictures, there were so many things wrong. And while I'm not a content expert in the areas, I know about instructional design. So I can't spend time. And luckily, I didn't say, but at the beginning, I listed the co-author of the presentation as my LTD instructional designer. She was very instrumental. There were many nights we were up 1 or 2 in the morning, and we were there looking on materials, collaborating online to try to get it ready. So it's that part of it, and having that commitment of individuals for working, because although I have pointed out along the way to the instructional designers, you need to change this, you need to look at this, you need to review this, you need to talk with your course developer about this. I still found that they would do it, they would say that they did it, but when I got it back, there was no appreciable difference in what I'm seeing, and I knew that, how are you measuring this assessment strategy that you have designed here? How does it link back to those living outcomes and living objectives that you have listed to this document? And it was like they were not training or they didn't know. And I realized afterwards that it's that change process that puts us into the block and they just went back to doing what they were doing before. And they were becoming motivated because there was as a heavy partner redoing their work. So this is fun and it would be some kind of punitive measure. But of course, I would not do that. Went through a process of me trying to explain to them, look, we have to do things differently, and we had that kind of reflective exercise where they were able to speak openly about the issues that they had. Right? I did one-on-one first, because I didn't want to embarrass anybody. And I had to be really very, very explicit about what I wanted, and I asked them to do the same. They did a performance assessment for me, and I did one for them. And we have been able to do it. Our process is a lot better this time around, but there are some challenges.
One more last question.
Hi. Mentioned that you had changes that had to be made, like to the original learning outline, to the plan, and you were changing the outline. In a high volume production environment, how do you tolerate documents that aren't final? I don't want to be too process oriented, but I just can't really envision how you can handle a high volume of production without final documents.
Yeah.
So how do you cope with that?
Yeah, we had I have a very good production manager. She's a lot like me, and the good thing is that she is located in the country as I am. So we will look at the process, and we have to make a connection. Because we will also use an Azure Shadow, if you're familiar with the portal as a type of project management from Rank States, we were also using Galaxy. So we were able to use labels to help us to know which documents we will be with as final. We will not put the documents there unless they have reached a particular stage of finality. So it's using Google Drive, using the email, and a portal to try to identify which will be the final document. We did not talk. It turned out that as we got into the start of the academic year, usually what we would do is we would have our production team finalize the materials, they would be nice to kind of feel, we would do all the graphics and multimedia bits and so on. So students can have created this as a blue document for the mix, and created this PDF file, use some colors to make sure that it was clean and before. So we have a version, and we have, of course, to use the filter that clearly stated it was version 1, so that everybody would know this is not a kind of document, and we use it in the environment. Now we are going through the process of tidying up and putting all the bells and whistles and ensuring that it is clean and ready so that the next of our course, the final vision will be revealed. Right? So those are some of the contingencies that we have to put in place. I started to write it.
Okay, thank you for sharing this really hands-on experience with agile learning design from the University of the West Indies. Now I'm very happy to introduce our last speaker, Stephen Downs. Stephen Downs is a research officer with the National Research Council in Canada. He's now the program leader for the learning and performance support systems. The department program. Many of you may know newsletter, the OL Daily, in which he writes about e-learning trends, online education, and many other things. And you probably, if you ever came across the word MOOC, Massive Open Online Course, Stephen Downs would be the first person you should meet. He sort of invented, if I may say so, the MOOC, and created was part of one of the biggest learning trends in the last 100 years. That's brought in the title Duke of MOOC, which he revealed to us yesterday evening. So, and Stephen Downs will talk about pitfalls, the dangers, the traps one can run into when using agile learning design. So, welcome with me, Stephen Downs.
So, hello everyone. I'd like to state for the record, I love the blue dots. I'm listening to everyone watching the blue dots. So, I've been tasked in the role of the person who finds the problems with the topic that we're all praising. I do like agile design, I like it a lot. I like the concept of agile learning design, I like it a lot. But now, I've been in the field of programming for many years, I've been in the field of learning design for many years, I've worked on small projects, I've worked on big projects, I've been the peon at the bottom of the pile, and currently I'm the program leader responsible for producing outcomes. So I've seen it from different angles, and there's so many ways it can go wrong, especially when we move from the very static domain of software design to the far less static domain of learning design. Agile learning design is the least agile thing you'll ever see. That's actually a graphic from IMS. The learning design specification. That's supposed to be for the ultimate and flexible. It's like a play with the director and roles and all of that. But, you know, once you're into the thing, there isn't a whole lot of flexibility happening. And it leads to questioning just what is it that we're up to when we're talking about agile learning design? Are we talking about agile learning design? Or are we talking about the design of agile learning? Two different things. And it seems to me that it doesn't make sense to give the instructional designers all that freedom and flexibility if we're going to march students lockstep through a predefined kind of process. Here's what agile learning design ought to look like. Here's a flow. This is agile design generally. It's an iterative thing, and people don't talk about that so much, but it's an iterative thing. each iteration is like designing a full and complete product. And then you might spin off some side things, some prototype things as you need to. But you know, version one, version two, you're doing the same thing over again. No course in the world, well maybe not no course, but few courses in the world are designed that way. Courses progress from lesson one, lesson two, lesson three, lesson four. They don't cover all of geometry and then all of geometry in more detail and all of geometry in more detail. It's a different way of thinking about the process. So one of the major concepts in agile design generally is the scrum. The scrum is basically a self-organizing development team. It is originally drawn from the idea that programmers are the smartest people in the world and do not need management. Not necessarily. There is the idea here that the programmers know how to program and they know how to produce the outcomes if they are left to do the job for themselves, organize for themselves. And in the scrum meeting, as you're mapping out the tasks, each of the tasks in the scrum is self-selected by the programmer. So they're volunteering to jump in to do these things. They're taking commitments on themselves. They're specifying how much time, how much effort will be required to produce this commitment. So, okay, that's good. But this doesn't happen by magic. It takes time, and agile is typically employed in larger software development projects, but when we're doing learning design, we're doing something a lot smaller, a lot more precise. The question came up earlier, you know, what about the high-volume instructional design? Well, high-volume instructional design, you don't have time for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks of your development team organizing itself. Another problem. As your projects get bigger, and we've worked on some very large projects, your teams get very large. You think about all the different people who can and eventually will get involved in the design of your learning or in the delivery of your agile learning. You've got designers, you've got subject matter experts, you've got programmers, you've got human interaction specialists, etc. Eventually you get a very large, very complex team. As you get larger teams, you do not generate more efficiency, it's well known, you generate less efficiency. So what's the solution? Split teams, okay. Now you have competing development teams working on the same project. This sounds like, you know, okay, we've split the task, it's great. But when you split the task, you now have two different groups of people with different objectives, different responsibilities. They're competing off for resources, they're competing off for priority. We have a project where we had two agile teams. We ended up with two versions of the thing that we were developing. Basically, they didn't split into functional groups. What's the word for it? One cell divided. Mitosis? So basically, we've got two small versions of the project we were trying to create. Another pitfall, if you try to organize your groups into, you know, okay, this group will do this part of it, this group will do that part of it, you get specialized scrums. So now, nobody's working on the final project, And there's a danger of seeing this, and we've had this, in fact, I'm living this at this very moment, where everybody, all of the teams, want to do the analysis bit, or the rapid prototyping bit, but we're trying to bring product to actual users at the end. We want it to be a deliverable product. Nobody wants to do the last stage of error testing, of hardening the code. That's the least popular scrum. So they go back to they don't want to do prototyping again. Finally, well not quite finally, but we're getting there. Who is the product owner. In the Scrum process, you're delivering elements. And the idea is that as you go through each sprint, which is a short-term cycle for your development process, you're producing outcomes, you're producing deliverables, and these deliverables are delivered to the product owner, who will set the deliverable and, even more importantly, define the conditions to the completion of that deliverable. Did you do it or not? How do you know? Well, you have to have certain criteria. It has this test. It produces this function. It has to be really solid and concrete. Well, that's good in education or sort of. That's good in software development. You're your product owner, this is your client, perhaps your architect, somebody like that. They know what they want. Education is completely different. In education, there is no product owner per se. Think about it. Think about the different populations that are involved in learning. There is the end user, also known as the student, who in a typical instructional design process does not show up until after the instructional design has been done. Makes it very hard to be agile. There is the subject matter expert, also known as the professor. The professor has his or her own ideas of what the deliverable must be. Then there is the administrator, the dean, or the president, or the department of extended learning, or whatever, who have other objectives, often revenue objectives or course completion objectives. They have their own definition. All of these definitions are different. I guarantee you they're conflicting and they're competing. You can't just pick one, because if you pick one, you're not being agile for the others. What's worse? They have not just competing interests, they have different levels of expertise. We're designing a system right now where we're trying to create agile learning itself. This is, I'd like to talk about that. That's not the purpose of this particular talk. But the idea here is that as the learning is unfolding, the process, the outcomes, the deliverables, and all that can change as the needs of the learner change. Very ambitious, really hard. You have to think about learning differently in order to do that. Well, we've got our development teams. Our development teams were raised in the traditional educational system. Their idea of education and online learning is create some videos, put them online. Well, if we're iterating over a project, the first version of the project, also known as the minimally viable product, it's going to be pretty simple. And it's going to be something that you can do with fairly traditional methods. And your programmers and developers, all other things being equal, will fall back on the traditional methods, because they're not being challenged with the minimal viable product. The end goal where you want to get to is something really flexible and dynamic, but by the time you get to stage 5 or so, they've built many, many static structures, because that's what it took to get to the minimally viable product at each release, at each iteration. So you have to start over. And you start over, and everybody agrees, okay, the project is about something a lot more flexible than that. And you start developing it again, and the same sort of problem happens because your developers and your designer did not acquire that expertise in the meantime. So they go back to what they already know. So there's a difficulty here. In instructional design, we're attempting to create an outcome that is not part of the skill set of the people producing the product that results in the instructional design. Finally, learning objectives. This is the meta thing, right? And then I get this one all the time. We do connectivist style books, the connectivist style book. We say there is no curriculum, it's not about acquiring a certain predefined body of content, because we want to meet participants' needs as they go through the course, and these needs are different for every person, and these needs change over time. and it should be up to the participant, who ought to be the product owner, to define what success is and define what the outcome should be to move in target. Nobody who funds education wants to deal with that. Nobody. Every last one of them wants to see course completions, certificates, competencies, curricular outcomes. They want them defined ahead of time. They want them approved by the curriculum board or the school board, whoever's in charge. All of this must be set ahead of time. And then you're supposed to go on the agile. Two very contradictory perspectives at work here. It's not possible to do agile learning, much less agile learning design, in an environment where the structure and the outcomes are all predefined. That's me. That's my short talk, and I thank you very much.
The practical or the observations to a practical approach in agile learning design. Now we may open the podium, the stage for more questions, comments on agile learning design, questions for speakers, for release, or as mean, or we'd be also happy to share some experiences with us on what you've done in our learning design using agile methods. So, but let me first some questions for some downs to give everyone the right to the same time. We take one or two questions, or do we open for the audience? Hey, one row.
Yes, I have a question for Stephen. Do you have examples of agile learning?
I would say that the Connectivist courses that we, George Siemens and I, created are examples of agile learning. Take CCK08, for example. It's the first course we did. Basically, what we said is, we're going to cover some topics, we're going to talk about these topics, but we'll change what we'll talk about if people want to change. The resources that we brought into the course, those resources were picked on the fly by the participants in the course, or created on the fly by the participants in the course, and the outcome of the course was not predefined ahead of time. I would call that agile.
And how did you assess the outcomes?
Not by grades, because there were no grades. Look, we did not, first of all, the main outcome we had was, is this possible? And at the end of the course, we said, yes, it is possible. So, you know, I deal a lot of the time with can something be done, or does something exist, rather than, you know, have I gone to a certain degree towards some ideal predefined state. You know, it's hard to define those outcomes. The other way I look at the outcome, it's now 7 years later, and I remember many of the participants in the course, and I've seen those participants themselves take what they've learned in the course, and I see those concepts and ideas replicated, shared, transformed, transmutated, transmogrified, etc. And the people themselves who have done this have gone on to have very good careers. Many of them already had careers, and they've augmented their careers. I call that success. Now, do I have a firm assessment of that? No, I don't, because there is no existing mechanism for measuring that. But from my own observation, this appears to be very successful.
The Agile Learning Center is a sort of school in New York City. So it forms part of a formal education system. And they teach kids agile. And if you go to their webpage, you'll see the concept that they want. And I use all sorts of tools, very interesting. And it's for training. It's very complicated. Because if you go with a model which is in the business and it's a real one, the acceptance criteria are nuanced. So when you do the user acceptance test at the end, which is the business acceptance, what they look at is the whole acceptance criteria structure. Like, if I do this, the process then evaluates. And that's pretty fine as well. So it's complicated. It has to be.
So it's predefined, it's not really agile.
Not agile, yeah. And it's the end of setting.
Okay, there are three gentlemen over there. Raise a question. Who's got the microphone with the white shirt? And then there was another question from the back. Okay, please.
Hello, I'm Claudio Versace from Amsterdam. And I'm reading something you said. It's not possible to do agile in any organization school where the outcome is predefined. Is the process, is it credible process?
I'm sorry?
Is the process credible for agile?
Is the process what?
Gradable.
Gradable. Gradable isn't a word. anything is gradable. Is it well? I'm not even sure what you mean by gradable. I mean, do you mean assigned grades? Do you mean set at a different level?
I think
or?
What you mean by the outcome is predefined. It's not possible with agile. To do agile in school, the outcome cannot be predefined. That's what you said.
Yes.
But can you have some kind of grades on the process to come there? So that you do not redefine the outcome, but you grade the process of that job. Can you do that?
Then the process becomes the outcome, doesn't it? Right. When you start marking and assessing, if whatever you're marking and assessing is predefined, then you can't change that, otherwise you're not marking or assessing it anymore, and that's when the administrators really get upset. So, typically, it's test results, but less typically, but not that rarely really, it's process, like showing up to class or contributing 10 posts in a discussion. But then that becomes the outcome. And you can't deviate from that.
Okay, so
there's also an extra book, I can't remember, but I keep finding it in my slides, called Testing and Integrating Schools. And it's a teacher from Canada, the only one allowed not to grade. So no one knows it. Exactly how to manage, but to manage. And I think he's excellent. And then he explains what are the pitfalls of grading, like, and how you grade the idea by not grading somewhere.
Yeah. There was the question over there with the microphone.
There's a question.
Oh, it's in your hands.
So I think there's a lot of value in the agile metaphor in education and in educational design. I think we have a lot to learn from agile methods and methodology in software engineering.
Sure.
But as you said, we're in a very different domain, and I think the analogy. We should be careful not to stretch the analogy too far. So perhaps. We need our own agile manifesto. Perhaps we shouldn't look at the agile software manifesto as a Bible or 10 commandments, but actually think about what are the 10 principles for agile learning and agile learning design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really a fan of manifestos, but and if you did it would be taken up by someone in Stanford and attached to videos, and it would become a new movement for teaching through the use of video.
now my office, it turns out that agile design seems to be a little difficult to adapt to formal education, or difficult to adapt to the process of how learning design is done, or the process at the university. So maybe each of you could comment what you see as a future of agile education, the new manifesto, or whatever, however you can call it. Yes, please, why don't we go?
From my point of view, it's not actually about adapting agile to formal, because that's not possible.
Yeah.
That's not possible. No, we have totally different mindsets, totally different paradigms, totally different basic values. So I think you can do agile education model, and you can even write agile education policy, but it has to be based on totally new values, like more transparency, more cross-functionality, more openness, more collaboration between sectors, more let's say less teaching, more learning, you know, stuff like that. So it's about how we understand what learning is today based on the simple fact that we live in a super complex environment. And things change so quickly that if you don't know how to integrate information that comes constantly and bugs you, you know, then you are probably wrong. So,
but that's not agile properly so called, right?
No, yeah, it's just
like, you know, that could be called constructivism. You could make the same point.
I agree.
So I mean, agile is something a bit different from that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So this is new agile. Last comments.
Yeah, imagine let's do a little thought experiment here. Okay. So we have an educational system already defined in a series of sprints. We'll call them years, because it's a very long production schedule. So year one is sprint one, year two is sprint two, etc. So what we want to be able to do at the end of each sprint is come up with a complete education. That's the agile method, right? So, and then we'll look at that complete education, then we'll start it over. Can we possibly pull that off? Especially considering that for each new set of sprints, or sprouts, just kidding, you know, what counts as a complete education is going to change, and that the feedback from the user and the owner is going to dramatically affect the outcome of each sprint. Now that's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And you're right, it's hard because it's that process. You have to keep going around and around, and I mean, we have learned that as we are moving into our second cycle. Now, I understand what you're saying in terms of the actual, when you are in the environment, the actual product, the student, and what comes out of it, the certification, and all that. It's very difficult to do that if you don't have a structure, right? And the examination process and so on. So I understand that side of it, but I think that agile has a lot to give in the different stages that people go through. So as we try and try to adapt it into use of content development, I find that this is an excellent strategy. It has its pitfalls, of course, so yeah, it's hard. But I think the end result is something that's a lot better than what you were had at the beginning, and having people working collaboratively and in that kind of iterative process. I think it helps us to build skills. I feel like if my staff, using our example, I feel like if they are better at their jobs for having gone through that process. And that is something that it's critical to what we do. And to see the improvements as you go on over time will be beneficial to the organization. It will cut down on our costs. It would make us a lot more efficient as they understand the processes, and we can see it applied in what we do. So I think that there is an opportunity for it, and I know you said you were in favor of agile, you had to present pitfalls, but I see a future. How are we going to adapt it so that when we are actually in the courses and we are teaching and we economic outcomes for students, that is something that I see as a big reward.
I don't think that is possible.
You reminded me of something, is like when we talk about the return to incremental growth, which is correct. I mean, what you build is a whole product at once. But not mainly in this very second in the whole product. What you keep in mind always, and I think the agile is super valuable for that, is the direct link between vision and action. And there's this perfect saying that says like, vision without action is a daydream, and action without a vision is a nightmare. So for me, agile would be something that makes me rethink in every double, in every single sprint, the shorter the better, how the outcome is created. That can be predefined, actually, at that very moment, it can be predefined. It's a deliberate phase. How it affects the strategy phase, how it affects the whole vision. So if you keep the loops ongoing, like I make something, I go for feedback, I inspect the vision, I go into making something, I go for feedback, I inspect the vision, then you get the vision and the action constantly bumped. And I think that's the iterative incremental growth. You hold building, and then you say, okay, I want this building done. Maybe I don't want it done, actually. Maybe the fidelity of the building will depend on whatever. We will see. That's agile. I don't want to predict that. But I know the building has to hold space for, I don't know how many people. I know the building needs to be nice, and I know the building needs to be safe, and stuff like that. And then you go into building part of it, but never forgetting about other parts that are not being built at that moment. So that's the agile.
Okay, thank you. The loop continues, the loop of learning, learning about learning and learning design. Also here at Online Leaderpa, we've come to the end of our workshop. I would like to thank our three speakers for coming all the way and telling us more about agile learning design. I would like to thank all of you for joining us this afternoon. The conference has a goal of being more interactive every year. So this year, the new conference app, the OED 15 conference app, contains a poll. So we have a poll from which can be opened in the conference app. If you don't have that app already, there is a website you can go to, and they told me that they would put the link onto it, see the poll already, and it asks you whether you'd be more inclined to use agile methods after this workshop. Yes, no, maybe. So, very short question. If you don't have the app on your smartphone or the iPad or whatever, you can use a website, and the website has this URL, which is the workshop number, which is ds22.online-educa.com. So it's ds22.online-educa.com. And there you can find the poll as well. You need to refresh your browser so you can see the results of your.
Can I say one thing before we finish?
Yes.
Well, it's just because her comments about loops set off a whole new train of thought. And there are concepts of learning out there called single loop and double loop learning. And we didn't touch on that at all, and I'm just kicking myself now. Because it's so core to this topic, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention it. Single loop learning is you learn something, and you actually go out and apply it in the real world, and you come back and your learning is adjusted and refined according to your real world performance. So for example, if you're a pilot, if you crash the plane, you have to go do landings again. Double loop is you do the same thing, but now what you're assessing when you come back, and you're doing it with multiple students, is you're assessing the training system or the training design itself. So if all of your pilots are crashing on landing, maybe it's not the pilot's fault, maybe it's the way we're training the pilots. And so you adjust your training mechanism. That kind of single loop and double loop mechanism needs to be built into learning technology in order to make the learning and the learning design agile. But we're not yet to that point, I would say. I just wanted to throw that in.
Okay, and I guess we need to close.
One important factor is that there is, you probably know, you yourself went to the Catalonia, the Open University of Catalonia. They're a totally online university. They went into this agile education model, they made a pilot, and they will go through the full implementation of the pilot of excellence. So if you go to the web page and check it.
Yeah, all you see is where you're there.
We can put up on the website. So thanks for talking about that.
Sorry about that, I just had to put it in.
Just an airport example. I don't know if you got something to say to your projects, to your learning design. I hope to see you next year at online EduCar. I will give you an update on the Berlin airport. You come in a couple of years, you may be able to fly into that airport actually. Whatever. Okay, have a nice afternoon.
Hi everyone. We have zero viewers.
Zero viewers?
Yeah. It's okay, we have a recording.
Do I have 2 minutes?
Yes. Hi.
Wolf Hønsdal. I'm head of production at NDLA, the Norwegian Digital Learning Arena.
Mm-hmm.
We're using lean innovation methods for